Got to start that with my infamous meadowlark bird call. We are going to continue with Corinthians tonight. And I am, I'm kind of surprised at the emails I'm getting. Not like I used to at all in those days, but I can't keep up with the few I got, which is kind of dumb on my part. But we're getting some interest. They want to hear more about the Corinthians. One guy, Bob, good old brother Bob, back in California, told me to slow down. I didn't even know Bob was listening, so that was good. So, Bob, how are you doing? Hi out there when you see us sometime. So, we're on chapter 8. And, you know, I keep thinking about this. I think maybe the reason we're interested in Corinthians, as much as it's turning out to be, it's going to be a while to get through it all, though, is Corinthians is just Paul talking to a bunch of carnal, earthy, worldly, division-oriented, squabbling, murmuring, lying, people that are still part of a local church, the Church of Corinth. Whether it was a local church building or it was just the church people, the saved people as such in the town of Corinth, which is really all it needs to be. Don't need all these denominational churches everywhere, but Paul knew there was division, and I think that was where this denominational thing got its beginning. It was way back at the beginning, which is where beginning usually begins, is at the beginning. So we're finding out that, you know, Paul teaches in Timothy and Titus and Romans like some marvelous stuff, some joyful things about doing right and pleasing God, you know, the standards, the modesty, the volume level, you know, the roles of ladies and men, and the, even think about this, rightly dividing. We know that Paul's books are written to us as Gentiles, and we even have to realize that there's things within Paul's books that are written to ladies that aren't written to men, and things that are written to men that aren't written to ladies. So, you know, the ladies get really discombobulated when a man isn't doing his part, even from the scriptures. And the ladies step up to the plate and do the hardcore fighting and that sort of a thing. So that's okay. I mean, we realize there's some things in there. Paul has written to the Gentiles, which is not a Church of God person. He's a saved, you know, he writes things to save people. That's his ministry. But he does have some things that are directed to an unsaved Gentile, which is what a Gentile is, an unsaved person. When he compares them in Ephesians chapter 4, if that makes sense. So rightly dividing isn't complicated. It's just common. It makes sense. You're reading something. Who's he writing that to? And these guys that go verse by verse, so that's just baloney, because this book is written to Gentiles and then to Church of God. And if a person wants to get off on that thing, he can still come up with a bunch of crazy Baptistic ideas. So, you know, you got to get out of the Baptist realm. I mean, I'm sorry, that's what it's turning out to be. And I think that the Baptist teachings, the things that I've heard and read their manuals and their teaching stuff, they're as deceptive as deception can be, and are probably more difficult, more deceptive to people than anything. It's like a New King James Bible compared to a King James Bible, or the 21st century King James Bible. It's so similar that it's dangerous, because, no, it really is just as bad as the rest. So this Corinth stuff is going to be hard for us to deal with, because these are the things that are really serious. Yet we know we still have God's grace. We have his imputed righteousness. We have, here he is. He's talking about tongues in chapter 14. And we know that we're not supposed to be doing the tongues thing. And it isn't because of, because in Mark it says that we're supposed to have tongues if we're a Christian as a sign. Everybody says that, well, the Jews are for signs. Well, yeah, but there in the Acts, there's some Gentiles that pick up on the tongues thing. So the real simple division is Paul's writings, and then when Paul's talking about how they were given the knowledge, et cetera, during his time, that's before the that which is perfect has come. So there's your two major important divisions. And even Acts itself is transitional, which carries through the divisions. Why won't it be transitional from the Gentile age to the tribulation? There's some transition in there, so it's not going to be so obvious. We're already seeing transitional things. Doesn't mean we're in the tribulation, but it means it's coming. So, maybe that'll help some of those folks who have been writing questions and things, but we're going to start with chapter 8 tonight. Remember, the main purpose of this whole thing is to show us how things that are in Paul's writings in Corinthians are not done today, some of them, because it was, in his day, there was no Bible. So they had to learn these things from God, and Paul had to tell it to them, and Barnabas and these guys. And if we pull that stuff off today, then we haven't got, which that's just perfect, that's that Bible, then we can go back to the old standard gospel thing, which is what people want to do. But if we do that, we have to look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the first part of Acts, and then Corinthians, some of it. You have to rightly divide the verses like they're doing. And that's where they come up with the baptistic stuff, and then you forget about the rest of what Paul wrote. And so you take some stuff out of Corinthians, you know, like the Lord's Supper thing, the communion thing there, and if you mess up, God will kill you. Well, I don't think anybody's been killed yet. Maybe that's why some of these people are being killed on the highways as they skip Lord's Supper this weekend or something. Maybe the hospitals are full of people that aren't doing the Lord's Supper correctly. It's, you know. But in Paul's day, yeah, you messed with that thing, you did it wrong, God will take care of you. So they go to Peter and John and 1 John and James and all this kind of bull. They just skip Paul's stuff, that's all. Paul's stuff is full of joy and peace and marvelous grace and mercy, but it's also full of rebuke and reproof and et cetera, et cetera. So we get into Corinthians and we find out that there's some serious things that these people are doing in their carnal ways, their fleshy ways, and we're going to tackle some of these things. Now we're looking at idols tonight in chapter 8. Verse 1, now as touching things offered unto idols. Now, from this point on, we have to realize we're talking about idols. We're not talking about some other things that people try to associate this thing to. It would fit, but we just have to remember that specifically we are talking about idols here. And he says right here, we know that we all have knowledge. Well, sure, we all know that we know something. And here's that question. See, 1 Corinthians 13:10, one of the things that's done in part is knowledge. Says, whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. So people say, well, that can't be the Bible because we still have knowledge today. That's not what he's talking about, knowledge, brains. A lot of people don't have brains, obviously, but he's not talking about general all-around knowledge. He's talking about, look at verse, where's it at here? It's down to verse 7. Howbeit there's not in every man that knowledge. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about the knowledge of idols. Well, how are they going to get knowledge of idols in those days other than God gives it to them? And if it's from God himself and their feelings, et cetera, et cetera, and that's their heart, I mean, kind of stuff, or through Paul, whatever, that's what it was done. But it was only done in part. Just what God wanted them to know that they can handle, if that. So we see in verse 7 that these folks, for some with conscience of the idol unto this hour, see, remember the Gentiles were given a conscience. For some with conscience of the idol unto this hour eat it as a thing offered unto an idol. So they're into this idol worship stuff. They shouldn't be. They're supposed to know, but they don't have the knowledge of it. They didn't keep it. And their conscience, being weak, is defiled. So this idolatry stuff, this idol thing, is destroying these Gentiles who should know better but don't. We all have knowledge, he says. In fact, Romans chapter 1 even reminds us that when... Romans chapter 1 here, it says here, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. So everybody was given what they needed to know in part, and this through the Gentiles, through this conscience, and as this conscience gets defiled and more seared, there's where the Gentiles fall apart. Not because they were disobeying the Ten Commandments or the Levitical law. The Levitical law and Exodus and Deuteronomy and stuff and the Ten Commandments and all that, that was all to the Jews. So through all this time, the Gentiles have had a conscience. And over time, this conscience has become defiled and it's become a seared. And so there's a huge difference that you don't hear people talking about. So why would a Gentile want to try to go back and do the Levitical law? Well, we don't have to do the Levitical law, so why should we try? Well, why do you think you should? What about the Ten Commandments? Well, those are written to the Jews. Does so happen, by the way, friend, as we're supposed to say, the Ten Commandments are reiterated by Paul. He never calls them the Ten Commandments. That's the Jewish title for their laws. However, in the New Testament, in the dispensation of the grace age, only 9 of the commandments does Paul preach. He skips the one about remember the Sabbath day. And he takes care of that in Colossians chapter 2, verse 16. So that's how this stuff all goes here. So what we're talking about here is Paul is talking about, we all know that we're not supposed to mess with these idols. That's what he says here. And so, as we go on, keep in mind that that's what this is all about. Does that make sense? And are we still hearing things out there? Every once in a while, if nothing else, just type in a burp or something, then I'll know that either you're awake or the sound is working. There we go. Or if you drop your pencil, type in the word drop, click, 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 and I'll know that you made a noise and distracted people out there, all that kind of stuff. If you got a little kid in the house, type in wah, and a bang, there we go. Yeah. Okay, so I hope that explains where we're at with chapter 8, because it's got some interesting things here. Keep in mind, idols and worshiping idols is idolatry. Now listen to the definition of idolatry. The worship of idols, images, or anything made by hands, or which is not God. Idolatry is of two kinds, the worship of images, statues, pictures, etc. made by hands, and the worship of the heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and stars, devils, angels, men, and animals. Okay, so there's your idolatry thing. But there's another part to this. Excessive attachment for anything. That which borders on adoration. And it isn't just a statue of Mary in the bathtub in your backyard. It isn't just a statue on a cross. It isn't just your crucifix, that's what it is. It isn't, you know, that kind of stuff only. Excessive attachment or veneration, that's your worship again. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Baptists are full of idols. If a guy really wants to get into it, go down the list. So that's a very good idea, Sam. Very good point there. So an excessive attachment. Pastors can be a person's idol. And they are. That personality thing that's coming up in the tribulation, Jude 16. Music becomes a person's idol. Their own selves become their idols. Dresses, clothing can be idolatry to them. I'm coming to realize that a lot of people dress modestly, a lot of ladies dress modestly, but it isn't of the few that do. But for those few that do, it really isn't all modesty. It's just they're ashamed of being fat. Or they're trying to dress styles, because the styles nowadays are long skirts, long dresses, but the tops are low and tight. So I think that there's people that have alternative reasonings for this appearing as a Christian thing. And I'm noticing that little by little, even amongst Christian ladies, that it's just going backwards, one leaven at a time. And I think because some of it, it's idolatry. Their selves, their worship. You lose 50 pounds or 30 pounds, I guess they want to show it off. I don't know why that would be, other than that's our flesh and that's our old nature, the conversation of old, you know. So we can worship all sorts of things, including ourselves and our church. People won't quit their church because they know they're being taught the wrong stuff. It's become an idol to them. That's all they want. I don't care what happens here, we've got to have a church. And yet the community notices all that stuff, and they know that we're just worshiping idols just like them. They just think their idol is right and ours is wrong. Same old stuff. That's religion full of idols. So that's what he's talking about here. Okay, here we go. We'll start over. Now, as touching things offered unto idols, that's the subject here. We know that we all have knowledge. Well, he's talking about idols. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. And if any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing, yet has he ought to know. Okay, and then we're going to transfer all this to the King James Bible, right? Because we don't live in the day where God gave us stuff other than the salvation and the armor of God and his righteousness and that sort of a thing. But he doesn't give us the knowledge. He gives us a book. That's got the knowledge in it. We read that Bible. If any man think he knoweth anything about this book, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. Haven't you realized that the more you learn about your Bible, the more you realize you don't know? I know that there's sorrow that comes with knowledge, I think it is, and with wisdom comes grief, some deal like that. So the more you know about what's going on in this Bible, the more you realize that you really were a sinner. I mean, you really were rotten. And whenever you think you're starting to do a good job, you read something that goes, oh man, I'm still dirt. Well, yeah, you are in the flesh. So if any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. So you're doing great. We're all learning stuff, but we don't know what we still need to know. So there's still direction to go here. So now he's talking about idols. And then I like this verse 3. Oh, I like this verse 3. But if any man love God, the same is known of him. Now, that could do a sermon all by itself, but it'll be mostly my words. I won't do that sort of a thing. If you're dressing modestly, if you're talking softer, if you're trying to be the man, if you're trying not to go to movies and you're trying to be careful with your TV or even turn it off or whatever, or you go to somebody's reunion or family activity or just a family night at the house and they pull off a movie or all that kind of stuff that we're trying to stand against in the local community activities that people are getting involved with more and more and somebody doesn't want to. And all these things that we're trying to take a stand on here, because we know that those are those people's idols. Sports and the baseball. I used to drive by back in Walla Walla. I'd drive by the ballpark office. Every time I'd go there, I'd say, well, there's the religious center of Walla Walla. This is where they have their idols, the background, the diamond, the ball diamond, the sports activity. That's their idol to them. I've seen parents, they won't make it to church, they won't make it to some church activity all the time, but they will not miss one game, one practice. They will adjust their work schedules, they will adjust their vacations. They won't even have a vacation because of the sports schedule that their kids got involved with. And yesterday I saw a guy out with his daughter helping her learn how to shoot baskets, this little girl. And I thought, man, why isn't this little girl with mom learning how to be the mom, the mother, the wife? So, nothing new. It's just, that stuff still bothers me. I mean, the dads that are out there taking the kid, and here, sweetie, we're going to show you how to be a boy. We're going to teach you how to live like a boy, dress like a boy, act like a boy, and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, they're idols. And I'll say the same thing. Your children can be your idols. They were my idols. I'd based everything in my whole life on decisions, on houses, on jobs, the whole thing, on my kids. So I'm just as guilty. We're all guilty here. Okay. Anyway. Well, my point is this. If any man love God. But if you're doing all those things, saying no to this, I won't go through that list again. But if you're actually fighting against those things because you love God, and Paul and the Rightly Divided Bible, people will know that. Because you'll stand on it. But if you give in at all, or if you, you kind of bend left or right, once the way kind of flake out here and there, they know you're not doing it for God, you're doing it for your image, for your glory. But if you do it for God, and you are serious about it, they'll know. They'll know. They'll know that you're covering up, not because you're just covering up skin and stuff, because you're embarrassed, which is fine, shame, that's the way it's supposed to be, but you're doing it because you love God. They'll know the difference. So that's a powerful verse there to remind us why we are doing what we're doing because we love God, or is it the right thing because of the Baptist list, or is it the right thing because everybody else in the church dresses like that? I mean, you know, the justifying and excuses can go everywhere. But if any man love God, the same is known of him. May not like it, but they're mad at you because you love God. If you're inconsistent, they just don't like what you're wearing, but they don't give you a hard time about it. As concerning, therefore, the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, see, this is still best about idols, though. We know that an idol is nothing in the world. So we know that. And that there is none other God but one. So we know that. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as there be gods many, and lords many, I mean, they call them gods and the whole thing, and they think there's a lot of them, as there be gods many and lords many. They think there's a lot of them out there. But to us, there is but one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him. We as a Christian, as a church of God, we are what we are by him. He's done that. It isn't something we've done. Howbeit, there is not in every man that knowledge. Well, why not? God said he gave all have knowledge, verse 1. For some, with conscience of the idol unto this hour, eat it as a thing offered unto an idol. And their conscience, being weak, is defiled. Their conscience has caught up to the world, etc., etc. Here's this church of flesh, the Corinth church. And then here's a great verse, again, for our brethren who think that if they do right, God will bless them. If they don't, God won't bless them. But meat commandeth us not to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, neither if we eat not are we the worse. Again, back to the idol thing about eating as an idol thing. So we got people, if they do the right thing, they expect to be closer to God. And if they do the wrong thing, then they're not closer to God. And there's a verse that says, that's not true at all. Meat commendeth us not to God. For neither if we eat, we are the better, neither if we eat not, are we the worse. But here's the issue here. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak. For if any man see thee, which has knowledge, sit at meat in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? Okay, now this is a fantastic place to mention this. We have people, I know people, Christians in my years of being the pastor, et cetera, and talking with people and everything, that they think that if they listen to good music and they're around with somebody who listens to bad music, that, well, I don't want to offend them. I don't want them to cause them to stumble with my good music, so I'll listen to their music, so I won't make them mad. Here's another example. Modesty again. You go into a church or a place where everybody, all the ladies and guys are dressed immodest, and you traipse in there with your modest dress or modest jeans for the guys, and the, you know, you're all covered, dressed. You go, you know, you don't have the shirts off, guys, all that kind of stuff, and you stick out. And the people get mad at us because, what are you doing bringing your God in like this and all that kind of stuff? So they get irritated. And so we say, well, you know what? I don't want to cause them to stumble. So I will go, I will dress like they do. Or I'll behave like they do in this place. I'll play these kind of games with them because I don't want to cause them to stumble. So I'll go to the fair. I'll go to the truck rallies. I'll go to the races. I'll go to the movies because I don't want to cause anybody to stumble. That is totally opposite what Paul is talking about here when the stumbling thing. Because notice verse 9, here's the verse we use before, you know, we have all things are lawful, but we read that in verse 7. But here he says, no, we can't cause somebody to stumble to them that are weak. So here we have, you're doing right. Us doing right doesn't cause the lost person to stumble. He's talking about here that here you are, you know what's right, and for you to do wrong. And somebody who's weak will recognize that, well, you're doing wrong, so can I. That's where the person is going to stumble. It isn't because us doing right is going to cause somebody to stumble. It's us who know what's right, do something wrong to fit into the crowd, it's what's going to cause somebody to stumble. And we've got churches that are going into the community for sports programs, music programs, dance programs, the whole spiel, because we want them to think that, well, we don't think we're right. Why don't we think we're right? Why don't we know we're right? We don't have to be arrogant about it. We don't have to stick it in their faces like all the Baptist preaching guys are doing and all that stuff. We don't have to do that. We're supposed to still be meek in how we tell people things and teach people things and show them our testimony just because we exist that way. We cut ourselves back. And our actual cutting back is actually what's going to cause that community to stumble more. That's what's going to cause your family people to stumble more when you give in to them. When you sit down to them in a movie that you know you shouldn't be watching or you shouldn't be dressing like this, swimming is a big deal. And I people will not handle the swimming thing because it's hot and they got to go swimming. I'm sorry. There's not an excuse in the world, a justification in the world for us to go swimming in mixed company at all. Zero, zilch. I don't care what people say. It's for the children to be taught how to dress nakedly and swim in their little kids because they have nothing. When they get older and have something, they're still going to want to do it. Swimming is a huge, huge issue. I guarantee you, from what I've read with Paul, you wouldn't find him near a swimming beach. Anyway, so we get involved with these things. And actually, we're actually causing these people to stumble when they see us, who preach what we preach and live like we live, see us live their way, or listen to their music, or buy their clothes, or talk like they do, or for them to see us at the fair where the kids are pumping down grease and there's perverts walking all over the place and the music is horrible and they see us at that stuff, we cause those people to stumble. And yet we try to do it the other way. Well, I'm gonna dress like that. I'm gonna go to those places. I don't want them to think that I'm some high and mighty spiritual epileptic person. We talked about that Sunday. I don't want them to think I'm some highly religious person, I don't want to cause them to stumble. So I'm going to dress down. I'm going to go with them to these lousy places. I'm going to watch their movies too. You know what? You doing that is causing them to stumble. This is exactly what Paul is talking about here. For if any man see thee which has knowledge, see, they know you got the knowledge here, sit at meat in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? You just gave them the okay. I got to say it again because this is really big to me. I know so many people that are messed up with this thing. You sit down to that TV and you watch something crummy. Just sitting down to a TV to some people is a victory for them, which bothers me. But you sit down to a TV program that you know you shouldn't watch and you don't get up from it when they pop it on there, you're going to cause them to stumble. You getting up doesn't cause them to stumble. It might make them mad, but they're going to know that you love God, just like he says in verse 3. They'll know you love God because you're not going to watch that thing. You'll give up your family relationship. You'll give up things. You know, I mean, you know, part of the problem here is the women are out in the world where they're not supposed to be dealing with stuff that the men are supposed to deal with. Now, is that long enough on this stuff? I mean, I think this is I wish I'd have known this like 5 years ago, 10 years ago. How to explain to people that, you know, you're not supposed to. Yeah, we'll cause them to stumble if we show up dressed like this. No, you won't. You cause them to stumble when you go dressed like they are. Well, they're going to show a movie. Okay, then don't go. Yeah, but if I don't go, it'll cause them to stumble. No, you won't. If you go, you're causing somebody else to look at that. Well, there's somebody. I know they go to such and such a church and da-da-da-da, and they talk about God in the King James Bible, and they should know better because they're Christians, and you cause them to stumble. We got so much of Christianity, even the fake stuff, the folly stuff, is so much like the world anymore that the world, the lost people, look at Christianity and say, well, that's baloney. Well, yeah, it is baloney. But because Christians have gone so much to the world is not interested in what the Christians have today. And Christianity has caused the world to stumble by not standing for its God. Okay. Why are so many Bibles accepted in churches anymore? Because the King James crowd doesn't want to cause anybody to stumble by preaching King James only. You dummy. By you accepting these other Bibles is showing these people that that's okay, and you're causing them to stumble. That makes sense? Hello? Am I losing you? Everybody's gone. There we go. I wish I'd have been able to preach this 5-6 years ago. Anyway. And through thy knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died? But when ye sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, ye sin against Christ. Now we know that none of this is imputed. That's not the point here. Is we're causing these people to stumble. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. Now we're talking brothers here. But it still is applicable to the world as far as for the world, because they'll do the same thing. So now you know, Mark, you mentioned James. Sure, in the tribulation, this is going to be serious stuff. You do something that's lesser, which right, you will cause somebody to go to hell. You could cause somebody to lose their salvation in the tribulation. That's serious stuff. You're going to have to stand for what's right, because if you give in to a compromise, you know, you're causing somebody else to give in and causes them to stumble. And again, back in the tribulation, I don't think they'll have all knowledge. It'll be in part again. Because as God spoke, the holy men spoke as they were anyway, in Peter chapter 2. I think it is, or chapter 1, but anyway, whatever, 2 Peter, there we go. Okay, so there's that stuff right there. I hope that makes enough sense. I want people to listen to that segment. If they're not here tonight, they're going to listen to it anyway. Because I know there's more and more people that we think that we're causing people to stumble because we're King James only, or because we're following Paul, or because we are going to a certain church, or we're not going to a church. And we think that causes other people to stumble. No, you go to the church if it's right. You don't go to the church if it's wrong. If you do the opposite of whatever, you're causing a stumble. If you don't talk about the King James Bible says this and the other Bible say that, then you are causing them to stumble. If you do listen to music that you know you shouldn't be, so you don't cause them to stumble when they're riding with you in the car, you don't want to make them mad, you are causing them to stumble. If you go them to the fair, if you go them to the rallies, if you go them to these concerts and the music is bad and it's really bad and kind of stuff, you're actually causing them to stumble. You're not being full. You're not full of grace. No, you're weak. You're afraid to stand up for what's right. You're ashamed, and not only ashamed of the testimony of the Lord, you're ashamed of Paul. Or you're ashamed of the King James Bible. And I know a lot of us have been taught that. I hear it from the pulpits all the time. I know it's being spoken from the pulpit now. Let's not talk about the King James so much in church, because people won't come and will cause them to stumble. No, you backing off the King James Bible is going to show them that it isn't that important to you, and you are going to cause them to stumble. They still need to hear the truth. Living non-truth or compromising is going to cause everybody to stumble, even the brethren. So, that takes care of that one. That's chapter 8. We got time, let's do chapter 9. I want to get to chapter 10, but I guess I'll save it for Sunday because it talks about playtime. I'm really seeing more and more Christians not wanting to cause somebody to stumble. They're playing more than they used to. There's more playtime coming around now, and there's Paul deals with that too. But anyway, chapter 9, one chapter at a time here. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? Now this chapter, believe it or not, has to do with taking care of Paul financially or with his needs. So when we say that, you know, Paul doesn't really talk about the money thing, he does. Believe it or not, he talks about it quite a bit here in verse 9. He doesn't demand it on people, it's there for it, but he doesn't abuse it, because if he did, he would hinder the gospel of Christ. We'll see that in here. So he says, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Well, sure he is. He's not married, the whole deal here. Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Well, we know he has. That's important for Paul. Are not ye my work in the Lord? Yes, we belong to Paul. We're his sons. And he's our father, in a way, because we talked about that in Corinthians. If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. He knows he's an apostle because he's had those people turn to follow him and trust Jesus Christ as their Savior. I knew I was a pastor because I had people that came to hear their preaching. That kind of a thing. You know you're a father because you've got children. That's a clue. Mine answer to them that do examine me. So he's talking now, directing this to people. Now they're checking this guy. Who's this Paul guy to preach just like this anyway? Mine answer to them that do examine me is this. Here we go. Have we not power to eat and to drink? Well, sure he does. Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Yeah. Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working, which is to cease, is to stop? Well, yeah, they could stop working because this is what God wants them to be. These guys are apostles. Then he answers it this here. Who goeth to warfare any time at his own charges? I mean, you go to war, you got to pay for it. I remember, I'm of the generation that when we were in band or if we were in sports, you didn't have to pay to go to the games. You were the reason the game was there. I remember my senior year, they said, okay, you got to have to buy an activity ticket to go to your concerts. So why do we got to buy an activity ticket to go to our concerts and do the games? We play in them. We're part of the activity. Nope, you got to pay for that stuff now. So, and I know that, Sam, I think you had to pay for a lot of your stuff in the Navy. Don't you have to buy uniforms? Do they give a uniform allowance? I don't know. I know there's still things you have to buy. I guess, I don't know. I know teachers. You know, the stuff that's up, the millions of pictures and words that are up in classrooms, most of that stuff the teachers have bought themselves. And sometimes if you care about a kid enough, you're going to buy the kid his book anyway, because if they can't afford it, you want to help him learn, you'll buy him the stuff. But that isn't the way it should be. And Paul says, you know, who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? Kentridge, you got a farm out there. You eat from that farm if it's edible stuff that you're growing. You grow a garden and you got tomatoes and stuff, but you're not allowed to grow. No, you can eat those things, but you are growing them for other people as well. Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man? Or saith not the law the same also? Well, he says it's in the law here. For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? Or saith he altogether for our sakes? Now we're bringing it to him. For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that thresheth in hope shall be partaker of his hope. Now this is going to sound like I'm talking about still the need for money for the website, which we still need money for the website. Nothing's broken yet, but it's going to happen someday. I'm going to need another computer, or the internet cost is going to pop on me. I mean, who knows where this money comes in, you know? So this is along those lines, because now I have a job, not to support me person as a family anymore. Some people do, some people contribute. I just put it into the website, and it's greatly helped. And some people have even helped us financially still, personally. So what he's saying here, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? And here's Paul saying, listen, you know, it's okay for us to take care of a pastor or a preacher or an evangelist or a missionary or somebody who's even doing the ministry. You know, it's okay to help them in carnal things because he's helped you with spiritual things. It's okay. Because Paul and these guys aren't working. Now, Paul is a tent maker, et cetera, but he has here, it says here, have we not power to forbear working? That would be the impression we could get. Now, we'll see how much Paul really cares here. If others be partakers of this power over you, which they do, don't we give people donations? Don't we help people? We pay for things. and we help them along the line kind of a deal? Sure we do. Nevertheless, here we go. Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things. So Paul isn't whining about stuff. He isn't asking for stuff. And but he's living. He's suffering all things. But he allows all these things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. You know how much you know what you would all think about a man out there who's got gold-plated faucets and a gold-plated doghouse, all that kind of stuff. We wouldn't give him a nickel. And that's what modern Christianity is all about, is these guys living high off the hog. And the world, again, doesn't like... doesn't like... I remember the one time I got to go visit the pastor in New York, and he moved to Idaho. I went to visit him. He was a famous guy and all this kind of junk. And he had a rough life, supposedly, when he had to leave and all that stuff. And I got to his place, and his house had every sport item you needed to have, from snowshoes to ball gloves to bats to four-wheelers to boats to things. And I thought, man, this guy's doing okay. And then at the sermon he's preaching that they need money to give to the church, need money for himself, and I'm thinking, you know, this is where we're causing the world to stumble, because he's not doing right there. And Paul's example is he had the power to be that way. He needed that kind of stuff. He had his needs. In fact, look at Philippians chapter 1 here, I think it is. Or is this chapter 4? Philippians chapter 4. And look at what have we got here? Look at chapter, Ephesians. Where's Philippians? Philippians chapter 4, verse 14. Paul had some afflictions. Paul had some difficulties. Verse 14, notwithstanding, ye have done well that ye did communicate with my affliction. Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. Oh, you mean Paul didn't have to go on deputation for 5 years to come up with $25 a month for each person? He just took off. For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity. So Paul did have some needs, and the people were there for him. Yet he says, not because I desire a gift. Paul didn't want them to help. But I desire fruit that may abound to your account. So Paul, with his necessity, he was willing to suffer, he says in chapter 9 of Corinthians. But these people helped him out, and he was okay with that because they were going to reap of that of helping him out like that. Reap of that fruit. But I have all and abound. So Paul's not going to, he's got what he needs. And these people gave him, I am full, he says, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. Now here's something to think about, because there's a bunny trail up my bunny trail here. How many people give sacrificing? They don't give to sacrifice. They fit it into their budget. Now I'm not going to sit here and say, you sacrifice beyond what you have, and God will reward you. That's baloney. I'm not saying that at all. But people did give up some stuff to help Paul. But what did they get for rewards? They got eternity rewards, judgment seat of Christ rewards, not instant blessings. Remember the time I told you a long time ago, I gave a whole salary a month one time to a missionary because he had me convinced God's going to bless me? I was behind a month's salary or a month's income until I finally moved and sold our house for over a year. I was wondering where God was at with all that thing. That's baloney. I'm not saying that. Paul just says, I've got the power as an apostle. You guys need to take care of me, but I'm not going to beg. I'm not going to do that kind of stuff. And I'm just going to suffer all things here, he says, because I don't want to hinder the gospel of Christ. He had to do what he had to do. I know one time, and Marion, you're out there, you know this job, this story. Back at Tusha, I remember somebody said he saw a pastor with a fancy car, really nice Cadillac SUV or something. And he said, and I'm so glad that my pastor drives a Geo, an old beaten down Geo, you know. I remember that. That was funny as all get out. So in other words, if I'd have had a nice car, then he would have been embarrassed. He would have thought, well, you're living too well. And I've heard that 1,000 times. You know, Paul, some people have helped you out so much, you're doing fine, and all this kind of stuff. I hear that. Why should we give? The church is doing fine. That kind of thing. That's just funny stuff. And Paul says, I would hinder the gospel of Christ. I'm going to suffer all things. I'm going to allow all things, kind of a thing. Verse 13, do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. So he's got to live that way of the gospel, and that's what he preaches. He has to be that way. But he says, I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be done unto me. For if it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glory and void. We've got so many pastors that have so much stuff that they glory. Now we're going to an excess. We were never in a need that wasn't taken care of back in Tushy. And if it ever got to that point, somewhere along the line would come in at the right time and take care of that need. And it was a marvelous thing. I remember the first month or two I was there, I kept thinking, boy, we don't have that many people. Marilyn, you remember me saying this. We're not going to be here long enough to make it here for Christmas. And then we're going to die. Then we had the fire, the prairie fire. Lord, you brought us out here to die. No money, no nothing, and that of the done. And we went 13 years. Bills paid, money in the account. Oh, listen, just for the record, Grandma, don't carry this around. Maybe not even there, I don't know. But when we left, I heard later that there was a rumor that we left. We took $37,000 and $35,000 out of the church account when we left. I mean, people can get so bitter. And I heard that and I thought, you got to be kidding. What would I do with $35,000? You know, I still wouldn't, you know, anyway. It's amazing these things that take place. So it's a tough deal. When pastors or missionaries or even us here, we have a nice house, the air conditioner broke, I don't know how we're going to fix this thing or whatever, but that's a physical carnal need. Do we have to have that? No, we don't have to have that, but I'm going to find a way to get it because it's really too hot here kind of a thing. But this ministry, this website, okay, the computer goes, the other computer goes, the internet costs money, blah, 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 blah. Am I whining for money? Sure. No, not really. This is Paul's way. He says, listen, you guys got to take care of these people that are feeding you spiritually. That's what he says. And yet he says he himself doesn't talk about it, doesn't beg for it, doesn't want it, and his needs are always fulfilled. So this is the chapter, First Corinthians chapter 9, that deals with that touchy, touchy, touchy subject of money. And I notice nobody's names have gone off here yet, so that's fine. That's good. And know how to make tents. Out here, a tent is just a place for rattlesnakes to congregate when it's cold at night. They go looking for your tent because it's warm in there. Okay. So he says 15. I'll be doing that. Paul would rather die than he would glory and with people, and he would be glorying in the wrong thing. You'd never hear Paul say, "Now this is a tent. This is my tent. This tent has four different rooms in it, and I've got this string over to another tent." We have, that's called a can phone. We got all the highfalutin stuff here. And Paul would know that would cause people problems. He says 17. I don't understand this all and probably never will. Anybody who says they understand it, they don't know what they're talking about. 17. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. Preach the gospel. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. I don't know what that means. I have no clue. I read what other people thought, and I thought, you could have saved a page on there, Dr. Blank. You're just stretching that one. So he says in verse 18, get going here now. That's the first time I've really talked about money. Even Tushy, I didn't have to talk about it. What is my reward then? Verily that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. Now, let's pass this thing off to a King James Bible today. Now, this King James Bible should be given away free. There should be no charge to this thing. Nobody should make a living off of selling the truth. Amen? I mean, everybody wanted me to write a book on music. And I started, it's on the internet, it's there about three-fourths of the way through, whatever. I'm not going to pay any money to print that thing. It cost me a fortune. How many guys have $25,000, $30,000 worth of books in their garage when all they need to do is show people what the Bible says about music? That's all I want to do. So why do I need to write a book about what the Bible says about music if people could just read the Bible about music? That's an amazing thing. I don't mind talking about the language of music, the notations, the staff, the harmonies, the chords. I could write a book about that, but there's a million books out there on that stuff. Just find a piano teacher or teacher and just learn this stuff. Get an instrument, learn it. That's how you learn your language. So, where are we at here? Dispensation, what that is, reward, without charge, the Bible. So, we pay for these Bibles and we give them out to people. Now, in the last couple of years, I've realized that all these years we gave out Bibles, I believe that we were giving out Bibles and we didn't tell them how to read them. So we gave out all these Bibles, they didn't know what to do with it. It's like what I buy the other day, I don't know what it was, something we got the other day. Well, you get the, and you don't have an instruction manual. No, it wasn't the Bible, Marilyn. It was your filter a while ago. I forgot how to put those things together, and I didn't have the instruction book. So these Bibles, giving somebody a Bible, they know what to do with it. We actually cause them harm in lots of ways. So same thing with Paul here. We don't do the Bible thing for money. We don't sell our sermons. My sermons are not for sale. They're not copyrighted. You know, whatever that kind of a thing is. But the music they do, people send me money for the music, but I don't charge them for it. This is what Paul's talking about here. Okay, now, 19. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law. Wouldn't want to cause them to stumble. That I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law. Being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ. There's your, you know, we have no law. You know, all things are lawful. But as far as Christ goes, there are things that are still not expedient when it causes them to stumble, blah, 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 blah. So yes, we're without law to God. But Christ tells us there are still some things we should not do because you want to love God. So Paul is careful there. To them that are without law, as without law, parentheses, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak become I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I have made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And you know, this is where people go, they say, I can go down to the bar then to witness to people, because Paul wouldn't have gone to the bar to witness to people. Jesus wouldn't have gone down to the local bar, like they say. Well, he sat around the center. Well, yeah, and he did all that kind of stuff. He didn't partake, and he didn't go someplace where it would blow his testimony as such. So we don't do that. It's just people trying to justify going backwards. Well, see, if I don't go to the bar anymore, I'm going to cause those people, my friends in the bar, to stumble because they're not going to want my God. No. If you go to the bar, you're going to cause those people that know you shouldn't drink, da-da-da-da, or they wonder if a Christian's not supposed to, you're going to cause them to stumble. That's what he's saying. Anyway, that's bunny trailing. The White House should be off limits, yeah. And this I do for the gospel's sake. And he's talking about the gospel of Christ. We have our testimony for God. We have our testimony for Jesus Christ. We have a testimony for Paul. We even have a testimony for the King James Bible, because if we do things that the Bible says we ought not in Paul's writings, then we blow our testimony to a King James Bible. Oh yeah, you're the King James Bible church? Yes, we are. And I'm not ashamed of that. Anyway. Know ye not, and now here's something I have to do, I don't like to do. Here is a sports illustration. I don't like to do sports illustrations, because I think sports, I'm not against sports, but organized sports is competition, demanding money, fantasy. And the heroes there are horrible heroes for our children. Girls shouldn't be out there doing what they do. They can play the ball with the family or something, but to have them running around and bouncing all over the place in the gyms and immodest and teaching to be aggressive and all this kind of junk. No, I hate that element of sports. But he uses it here. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? Right? So you run really hard. Now, what do we got going on in schools today? We got everybody going off for track meet. Everybody has to win something. Everybody gets an award for participation. That's baloney. You know, that's just total baloney. First, second, third place is who wants second place? You want first place. You just want first place. No, we don't anymore. We're happy just, why should I run so hard? I'm going to get a little ribbon anyway, so what's the big deal? I don't want to be a loser. I was so bad I lost. Know ye not that they which run in the race run all, but one receiveth the prize. So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. You got to learn about everything. You want to be the CEO of a certain company, you've got to know about all the different parts of the company. Not just great on one thing. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown. But see, we do it for an incorruptible crown. I therefore what? Because we're running for an incorruptible crown. So run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. You ever seen people like me run? I've seen people that don't know how. I've seen kids not able to run. They're too busy working. They're too busy doing stuff. And it comes time to playing the sports things or the ball. So if we're just running after something, they've never run. And I've seen these kids just, now here's this phrase, run like a girl. Although now we've got girls running like guys. So that doesn't work anymore. But you just kind of flapping around. It's like I swim. I can get from point A to point B if point B isn't very far away, but I'm going to knock all the water out of the pool in the process. So I don't go swimming anyway, but when I did those swimming days, I just splattered like one of those toy fishes you get in a box of cereal. I therefore so run, not as uncertain. I want to win, he says here. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. Now here's a verse that we don't like at all. But I keep under my body and bring it under subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. You see a guy running like a spastic moron down the track, you're not going to give him the time of day as far as any wisdom or control, whatever. You know, you see what he's saying here? You run the race certainly. You know what the prize is, and you've got the prize of salvation. But there's also reward, eternity reward. There's a testimony. You're running a race. And it's not the rat race of Americans, of life on earth. You're running to win. You're the winner. So you got to run and run like a winner. And that means you got to keep things under my body, bring it into subjection. You've got to keep things together while you're doing this. And that's hard. So that takes care of chapter 9, and we'll stop there. There you go. We'll see you later.